Let's read together Exodus chapter 5. Now in this chapter, we have the results of Moses' first encounter with Pharaoh. Let's begin by reading verses 1 through 4. Exodus chapter 5, beginning at verse 1. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." And Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go." So they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with a sword." Then the king of Egypt said to them, "Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people from their work? Get back to your labor." Let's begin our study this morning with some background notes. At the end of Exodus chapter 4, Moses returned to Egypt after his 40 years in the land of Midian. He had started the journey from Midian with his wife and 2 sons. But apparently, after the circumcision of the 2 boys along the way, Moses sent his family back to Midian. We learn from Exodus chapter 18 that Moses' family rejoined him in the wilderness at Mount Sinai. I'm reading from Exodus chapter 18, beginning at verse 2. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back with her 2 sons, of whom the name of one was Gershom, for he said, "I have been a stranger in a foreign land," and the name of the other was Eleazar, for he said, "The God of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh." And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness where he was encamped at the mountain of God. Exodus 18, verses 2 through 5. When Moses returned to Egypt and shared with his fellow Hebrews all that the Lord was going to do for them, at first they believed and worshiped the Lord. Look at the last verse of Exodus chapter 4. So the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked on their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshiped. But now we find in chapter 5 that things do not go well when Moses and Aaron confront Pharaoh. In fact, from the human perspective, things get worse, as we'll see. As a result, the people are no longer worshiping the Lord, but rather they are bad-mouthing Moses. When Moses and Aaron first confronted Pharaoh, he said to them in verse 2, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go." But Pharaoh did not realize that the Lord has ways of changing a person's mind, then and today. And it doesn't matter who that person is. Even a pagan king of Egypt is under God's control. We read in Proverbs 21, verse 1, "The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he wishes." Proverbs 21, 1. Moses and Aaron responded to Pharaoh in verse 3, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go a 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword." Now, this was not deception by Moses and Aaron here. Neither was it deception when they asked to go and celebrate a feast in the wilderness in verse 1. God directed them to request this of Pharaoh. This was a testing of Pharaoh's heart and attitude. God knew that Pharaoh would refuse and the end result would be the complete exodus of the nation from Egypt. Well, so much for background. Let's move now to our doctrine or teaching points. Doctrinal point number 1, physical abuse does not mean that God has lost control. Physical abuse does not mean that God has lost control. Verses 5 through 18. And Pharaoh said, "Look, the people of the land are many now, and you make them rest from their labor." So the same day Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, "You shall no longer give the people straw to make brick as before. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. And you shall lay on them the quota of bricks which they made before. You shall not reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry out, saying, 'Let us go and sacrifice to our God.' Let more work be laid on the men, that they may labor in it, and let them not regard false words. And the taskmasters of the people and their officers went out and spoke to the people, saying, Thus says Pharaoh, I will not give you straw. Go get yourselves straw where you can find it. Yet none of your work will be reduced. So the people were scattered abroad throughout all the land of Egypt to gather stubble instead of straw. And the taskmasters forced them to hurry, saying, Fulfill your work, your daily quota, as when there was straw. Also the officers of the children of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, Why have you not fulfilled your task in making brick both yesterday and today as before? Then the officers of the children of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh, saying, Why are you dealing thus with your servants? There is no straw given to your servants, and they say to us, Make brick. And indeed your servants are beaten, but the fault is in your own people. But he said, You are idle, idle. Therefore you say, Let us go and sacrifice to the Lord. Therefore go now and work, for no straw shall be given you, yet you shall deliver the quota of bricks. After Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh on behalf of the children of Israel, the conditions of slavery became more severe. No more government straw. That was the word. Straw was used as a reinforcement and binder for the bricks that the Hebrew slaves were required to make. By the way, there are paintings in the Egyptian tombs of Semitic slaves making bricks. This is certainly evidence in support of the biblical account of the children of Israel making bricks as slaves in Egypt. Now Pharaoh said the Hebrew labor force would have to find their own straw. No more help from the Egyptians. So the Hebrews began using stubble for straw, verse 12, in order to keep up with the required quota of bricks. And the physical abuse was increased. Even the Hebrew foremen were beaten, verse 14. Also the officers of the children of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, Why have you not fulfilled your task in making brick both yesterday and today as before? It certainly seemed that God was not in control of this situation. His people were not being delivered from Egypt. In fact, the physical abuse of God's people has increased. But we know the rest of the story, don't we? God had reasons why he allowed his people to be abused. One reason was that it certainly made the people want to leave Egypt, for sure. You know, even with the abuse, most of the people later complained in the wilderness and wanted to go back to Egypt. Can you imagine if there had been no physical abuse? If there had been no abuse in Egypt, the children of Israel certainly would have gone back to Egypt, for sure. God had his reasons for allowing the oppression, even including the physical abuse of his people in Egypt. And we know that God had not lost control. The same is true today. We don't know all the reasons why God may allow his people to be abused, even physically abused. But he knows, and he never loses control. Now, this does not mean that we don't have a responsibility to stop physical abuse whenever and wherever it occurs. But sometimes God permits it to happen, even to his faithful people, for any number of reasons that we may not know until we get to heaven. God is still in control. Physical abuse does not mean that God has lost control. Doctrinal point number two. Personal attack does not mean that God doesn't care. Personal attack does not mean that God doesn't care. Verses 19 through 21. And the officers of the children of Israel saw that they were in trouble after it was said, You shall not reduce any bricks from your daily quota. Then as they came out from Pharaoh, they met Moses and Aaron, who stood there to meet them. And they said to them, Let the Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us. Here we see Moses under personal attack by his own people. Moses was putting his life at risk to go before Pharaoh on behalf of God's people. And what kind of credit does he get? He gets blamed for all the problems. Has that ever happened to you? As a parent? As a leader? As a servant? Here you are trying to do your job and help people, and they turn on you and blame you for all the problems. Illustration. You know, I remember sacrificing all kinds of time to lead a church youth group a number of years ago, and then getting blamed for not providing enough entertainment. Give me a break. It doesn't seem fair. Does God care? Yes, he does care. He cared for Moses, and he cares for you. Personal attack does not mean that God doesn't care. Now, we know from the rest of the story and the rest of the Bible that God greatly cared for his servant Moses, and Moses will be greatly rewarded in heaven. Remember the Apostle Paul. He was personally attacked, even by fellow believers, concerning his looks and speech. You remember that? Some Corinthians said that Paul's letters were weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence was weak and his speech contemptible. 2 Corinthians 10:10. The same will be true in our lives from time to time. We will be personally attacked, even by people we are trying to help. But this does not mean that God doesn't care. He does care. And you will be rewarded for your faithfulness. In 1 Corinthians 15:58, we read, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." 1 Corinthians 15:58. Many times your labor for the Lord will be under personal attack and because of personal attack. But take heart. God cares, and you will be rewarded for your faithfulness. Personal attack does not mean that God doesn't care. Practical application. Take it to the Lord in prayer. Take it to the Lord in prayer. Verses 22 and 23. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all." What do you do when you are personally attacked, as Moses was personally attacked? You take it to the Lord in prayer as Moses did. Notice how Moses laid the whole situation out before the Lord. "Lord, why did you let this happen? And why did you ever call me? I've gone to Pharaoh, as you said, but he won't let the people go. In fact, he's hurting the people even more." Now, this was not wrong for Moses to say. He was being honest before the Lord. Moses does not have a bad attitude here. And it's not wrong for us to lay all our doubts and problems out before the Lord in honest prayer. As long as we have an honest and humble attitude, it's not wrong to ask God what's going on. And the Lord will hear and answer our prayers as he did for Moses, as we'll see in chapter 6. So when you're under personal attack and can't understand why God is allowing certain things to happen in your life, ask the Lord to give you some insight, and he will. Take it to the Lord in prayer.